Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I ask you, is your struggle limiting your joy in life? Are you really able to dance in the meadow of your life? And we're going to talk about our meadows and what gets in the way of this dance with an author of a wonderful book called What's in the Way is the Way. We're going to find that meadow after all in this show. Moving beyond your struggle into the joy of being fully alive. And to help us do that is the author of the book, Mary O'Malley. Mary, welcome to Energy Stew.
So glad to be here, Peter.
Sounds like you're in a meadow.
That's who we really are.
Well, we would like to be more so, but yes. As you talk about in the book, it's cloudy.
Yes.
We have to deal with these clouds. And there's so many of them. It's thick.
But when we were very young, we lived in the meadow. We lived here this living moment. We were part of the great flow of life. And then we separated as we took on these clouds of the unconscious self that is made out of fear and glued together with judgment and always trying to get some place else.
Right, and we can see that in children. We can see the joy and the curiosity, the happiness that's natural for children.
Yes.
And then we can see them being conditioned.
Yes.
And by the time they're teenagers, you know, sometimes 10 and 11-year-old kids are really wonderful still.
Yeah. Slowly and surely, the clouds come over, and we pull ourselves up and out of our bodies, and we live in our heads. We are not even aware that for most of the time, we live in ideas about life rather than the living experience of life.
It's our survival mechanism that gets going, and we build up these survival traits that actually sabotage our openness because they close us down in order to survive. We even cut short our breath sometimes. And
deeply. There was a study done once of children before they went into preschool. They were breathing that natural breath, you know, that dogs and cats and babies do. Not one of them was breathing their natural breath by the time they went into first grade. So we learn how to hold on.
Yes.
And that cuts us off from the meadow that is always here.
Yes, but the meadow is out there, but we have to survive. And the way that we survive is through the conditioning that thinks that we have to fix things and be smart and control life in ways that protect us. And we don't know any different because this is survival. Our life depends on this protection.
Yes, the illusion of protection. And I would say something just a little bit different. The storyteller in our head learned and created this survival system that cuts us off from life. But whether we know it or not, whether we're reaching for chocolate or a Maserati car or, you know, the hottest woman in the world or, you know, a gallon of booze, what we really long for is the meadow. And yet, it is what we are also most afraid of, to let go of that control and come back to the great, intelligent, benevolent flow of life that also happens to include death, pain, and loss.
Right. And so it's about how do you handle your survival in the midst of a difficult world?
Yeah. Well, I think the first most important point is we've never left the meadow. This meadow is highly, highly intelligent. And it, for heaven's sakes, you were once one cell that was so tiny that you couldn't even see it with the naked eye, and then it developed into 70 trillion cells that all work together without a thought from you. And so that's so important to get, that when we separate out, we crawl into this fear-based mind that thinks it is in control. And so this is the core premise of the book, is that the challenges of our life are not here because we have done something wrong, God is punishing us, or they did something wrong, like our parents. The challenges are here to highlight the cloud bank of struggle that you have crawled into. And your attention is like the morning sun on the fog. There's nothing to fix. There's nothing to change. As you learn how to pay attention to the places that you hold, they literally dissolve, and you recognize that the safest thing you'll ever do is come back into consciously the flow of life.
That makes a lot of sense. And in the book, you do list, actually at the end of the book, you list a lot of the spells that we are taught in from early life about not being good enough and that life is dangerous.
Right. Yeah.
And that we have to control everything.
Right. Right. And I love the word spells because, you know, it came just as I was writing this book. And I love it because a spell is something that's laid over the top of you. It's not true, and it can be lifted. And most people don't see that 99% of fear is a spell. All of judgment is a spell. This sense that we've got to do it, and we've got to do it right, but we're never quite doing it right enough. This is a spell, and it all leads to the eighth core spell. I am all alone.
Yes.
And if we learn how to see this, we recognize something very powerful that life has given us. That word, alone, which is the greatest fear of all human beings, if you separate it out, it's all one.
Actually, even women are much more susceptible to that than men.
Yes, yes.
Because men often can be alone as the hunter.
Yes.
And they can go off and feel that they can get back. But women really struggle with being in community and being in relationship.
Yeah, yeah. And we feel more deeply. We just have been geared that way. And so, you know, when you create a baby, it takes a man, it takes a woman, but then the baby is incubated inside the woman in the womb. And so in my world, we also carry the womb that holds the suffering of humanity. And our job, it's the job of men too, but women are the way showers of how to be with all of this, these spells, this suffering that we live in, rather than being lost in it. And so much of the book is learning how to relate to fear and shame and loneliness and loss and despair and anger and judgment, rather than from it.
Right. And it's amazing how powerful our lives are controlled by these fears, and that the need is to reframe life, to reframe it so that you can see it from a vantage point that you can release your survival mechanisms, because there's another way to survive.
When
but it's a happy way to survive.
Exactly. And I would say just a little bit different, Peter. It's not release it as much as it is bringing your attention to these deep fears that we all carry. And some people say, well, I'm not afraid. You know, I said, well, do you ever have the feeling you didn't quite do that right enough, or you're afraid that that person won't like you? Oh, yeah, because most people think fear is something like, you know, but fear is woven through almost everything, single thought we have. And the more that we can bring our attention to this storyteller in our head, the more it releases. And that's the key.
It's amazing how much of our life is developed through survival. Because right. everything we learn is how to do things better and,
yes.
and more, you yes. know, more careful. Even learning a language is really a survival.
Right.
Learning numbers, everything is about how we can organize and structure our world so that we can live in it and
right.
survive in it. And so there are different levels of survival, and there are some that are much more functional in a comfortable, happy way. We just have to know that that's what it's there for. And then there are other ways that frighten us, and we try to be the inventors of our survival in ways that mm-hmm. only make us more and more fearful.
Exactly. And we hold our breath and we tighten our body, and then we the fight or flight response gets even stronger, and then we get more afraid and so on and so forth.
Right. And so what you talk about is how to reframe
right.
our reality so that we can live in, understand how the meta works, understand how life works
right.
outside of our constantly
yes.
storytelling minds.
Yes, and this survival system that was created by a child, because they now understand that mostly this storyteller in your head, its foundations were created before we were six. And it's not about getting rid of all of this. When I was waking up in the 60s, my God, we were going to an enlightenment, and we were going to kill the ego, and so on and so forth. You know, it really isn't about getting rid of it, because we do, at some level, need this survival system. And it's learning how to live from that greater space that this survival system is happening in, so that then we can use our mind rather than having our mind use us,
well,
or be lost in it, is a better way to say
right.
it.
Work with our mind
yes.
with the meadow.
Yes.
And yeah. and so it's a lot about, and you talk about it a lot in the book, about that life is smarter than us.
Yes.
And we have to surrender to what life has to teach us and show us and guide us.
When I was writing the book, which you know, every once in a while I'll go back and read one of my books, you know, and I'll go, good God, who wrote this? You know,
yeah, she was smart.
I know, she was very smart. Well, because I say that my greatest strength is I don't know how to do this work. That's my greatest strength. So there's that real sense of letting go. And as I was writing it, this little ditty came all in one fell swoop. Life is set up to bring up what has been bound up, so it can open up to be freed up, so you can show up for life.
Well, I think people should go over this again, taking notes of what you just said. You know, they can, on their computer screen, they can back up and then just go through that last sentence that you,
right.
you did and write it out so that they can be with it.
Yeah. Now, it's so important to get, I'm not just a Pollyanna. You know, I almost died from the level of suffering that I took on. And then hit rock bottom, tried to kill myself three times, and once gained 97 pounds in a year. And my book, The Gift of Our Compulsions, comes out of that, a whole new way of being with compulsions. And then life taught me how to be curious. And that's really what we're talking about. It's the difference from living in, oh, my God, the anxiousness is back again, and I've got to go and talk to my boss today, and, oh, my God, what happens if I blow it? I'll be fired, and then I'll be homeless. I mean, that's what the fear-based mind is like. Consciousness is about, oh, anxiousness is here. Huge difference. It's
yes.
learning how to relate to all of these spells that we took on rather than from them.
So it's to be the witness of it.
Exactly, which is who we really are. We are the awareness that can see sensations, thoughts, feelings, stories. We are not those. That's not who we are. We are the space that all of this is happening in.
And it's a larger space than our minds comprehend.
Bigger, but then we're afraid of it. But the safest thing I have ever discovered, and remember, I mean, I tried to control my way out of life because I couldn't control dread. That was the feeling I lived in. Dread is this horrible feeling that something really bad is going to happen, and it's going to happen because I did something wrong. And I tried to eat it away, and I tried to drink it away, and I tried to smoke it away, and I tried to drug it away. And slowly and surely, I learned how to turn towards and stand with it. And it began to move through me rather than just sitting there like a huge thundercloud above my head. And I tried to kill myself 3 times because I didn't know how to be with this, and everything I tried hadn't worked. And then I discovered the magic of curiosity.
And that's the most important, because curiosity is innocence.
Exactly. And it doesn't need anything to be any different than what it is. And, you know, in all my books, I talk about compassionate awareness, you know, but it really is the aware heart. And there's so much exciting stuff in science right now, how they're showing that we really have 3 brains, you know, the head brain, the heart brain, and the gut brain, and that of all of those 3, the most important, the king of all the 3 brains, is the heart brain.
Right, and our fears often keep us from going there because we can't control our hearts the way our minds would like to.
Right. And yet, it's home.
If we can just surrender to being home without buts, ifs, ands, and buts, it's about allowing the universe to take care of us in ways that we haven't trusted it yet.
Exactly. And that is so important, because you said if we could only surrender, but then you used the word allowing, because it is not about surrendering. You know, when the ego tries to take over surrendering, it just gets you into quicksand. But in some level, the more that we can see these clouds, see fear when it comes, oh, the anxious one is here, oh, the judger is here, oh, the alone one is here, the clouds begin to lift. We begin to recognize the meadow, and we are surrendered. It makes sense to us then that the most powerful thing we can do is soften our belly, open our heart, and show up right here for life.
You had the dreader show up.
Yeah, I did. But it was my teacher, Peter. That's the key, is that even the dread was the divine. We think the divine is all this light and, you know, openness and beauty and kindness and all that. Well, light is the dark, too. Look at the yin and yang symbol. And slowly and surely you begin to realize that the darkness that you took on is not the negative, horrible parts of yourself. They are life going, hey, yoo-hoo, take a look here.
No, what's interesting is that I feel really good about my life. I've achieved a lot, and there's a lot I'm proud of. And yet, anywhere along the way, if you took a snapshot and asked me, so how do things look from this vantage point? Mm-hmm. I would have said, I was in fear.
Right.
I wasn't holding it well. And I was worried about the future. Mm-hmm. And yet the future always worked out.
Always, yes.
And and I just actually had a birthday. I'm 72. So I'm very proud of that, because I've gone through so many resolutions in life, so many opportunities to be caught in my fears and having the universe come in as you say in the book, life come in and knows better and takes care of things in ways that
we can't imagine.
Right.
Yeah. Just think about those, that little tiny cell that you couldn't see with a naked eye. 70 trillion cells, that's what makes up your body. When was the last time that you had to digest your food or regulate your temperature? We have gotten so lost in unconsciousness, in the fear-based mind, that we do not see that life knows what it's doing. And we are afraid of death, but death is not what it looks like on the surface. We could do a whole call just on that. We are afraid of loss, and yet everything is constantly changing. There's nothing you can hold on to. And when you discover that, there's something that lasts. So that's why I keep on saying the safest thing we'll ever do is say yes to life. In fact, Eckhart Tolle has this wonderful quote, accept and then act. Act as if, yeah, I'm paraphrasing, I won't say his words exactly, act as if everything that is happening in your life, you have chosen it. And again, it's not the ego that's choosing it, it's the deep essence of it.
Right, the essence
of... This will miraculously change our life.
Well,
you're not fighting it.
One thing I work with in my consulting practice is a human design system, which uses our birth data and the Chinese I Ching, and it really understands the mechanics of who we're here to be, which is different from everybody else. So that's why we can't judge ourselves in relationship to anyone else and say there's something wrong with me. It's the way we have to be. And if we can fully live our design, we can live in the joy of, and you know, the splendor of our uniqueness without judgment.
Yes, and our necessity.
Right.
You know, life doesn't, you know, do all this to bring itself forth as us without needing us. And yet, as you said, this judger, it is unmerciful. It is it's so cruel. That's, you know, what caused me to try to kill myself three times. And I just had this thought. If your listeners would email me at awaken@MaryOMalley.com, I will send them a chapter from my first book, Belonging to Life, called Disarming the Judger, because it is one of the most important shifts in awakening when you begin to realize, as I said very early on, I don't say this anymore, the judger doesn't know shit. That we have these ideas, and it's one of the core spells. I've got to be what I think I should be. And then we spend our whole life crucifying ourselves because we are not living what we think we should be. And all the while, life is saying, unhook from the judger, show up, and be yourself.
Yeah, you know, so many times I get done with a chart reading, and people say, so how much of this can I change? And it's, no, you can't. You can just be better at being you.
Right. And seeing this judger, you know, it most people think, most people judge themselves, you know, on a level that they're not even aware of. And most people think other people are doing just fine. But, you know, if you put a hat on most people and could hear over a loudspeaker all of their daily thoughts, you would see that judgment and fear, especially self-judgment, but we also judge out there, but that's just the safety release valve for the judgment inside. Those are partners, fear and judgment. And as you learn how to, what I call, look to unhook, it becomes safer and safer to be ourselves. It wasn't safe to be ourselves when we were young. So, not at all. For very, very few people,
so this
is safe to be ourselves.
This is an important project for everybody listening to the show, is to learn how to be open and curious as to why you're who you are, and start letting life reveal itself to you in ways that this innocence can work for you.
Right.
And then you learn such wisdom about the stories that you've made up and understand why you've made them up.
Without judgment.
Right.
Without judgment. That's such a key as you begin to become bigger than this storyteller in your head that's made out of fear and glued together with judgment. you know, it really is a gift from life, and we don't have to write to judge any of it because it was created in the mind of a child. And when you recognize that, you see, oh my God, most of the world is run by children in adult bodies. All you have to do is look at the evening news. And if you want to become a healing place in the world, look to unhook from both fear and judgment, especially self-judgment.
And once you're aware of all this, you can see it in the behavior of so many people.
Yes.
There's one thing in your book that I really loved is where when you're upset, you ask, who's there? Right? What do you need to say? And tell me about your world.
Exactly.
I love that.
So imagine that you've just been called into the boss's office at the end of the day, and the boss, you know, throws down a desk, a report that you've done, and said, this is inadequate, and, you know, and he's always been a bit of a difficult boss, but this time he's on a tirade, and you finally leave, and you're just angry at him, and you get into your car, and all of a sudden, you know, you're thinking, oh God, I did really screw it up, and oh my God, I'm the worst person on the face of the planet, and you find yourself at McDonald's buying three of their big deluxe cheeseburger meals, or you find yourself at the store buying a gallon of alcohol or a dozen donuts or something along that line. Now, that's the world of unconsciousness. Now imagine you get in your car and the storyteller is just full steam ahead, and all of a sudden curiosity kicks in and says, oh, wait, what's going on here? Who's here? And it's so powerful when you can begin to say, oh, hi, angry one, I see you. And slowly and surely, or then the judgmental one, or the scared one, or the despairing one, or the one that says, oh, my God, I'm going to be homeless, you know.
Right. And then
slowly
what
and surely you learn how to be with them rather than follow them.
And ask it what it has to tell you.
Yes.
And it might be on our side and want to tell us good things.
Yeah. Well, and it also, these parts of ourselves, and it was Carl Jung that basically said, you know, we're a community in there, you know, and we have all these different parts. And whether it's the scared part or the judgmental part or the alone part, they all want to be heard, just like you and I want to be heard.
So let's get the conversation going.
Exactly.
Now, we're about at the end of the show. Mary O'Malley, the author of What's in the Way is the Way, that's O'Malley. And what was that website you were recommending?
Well, my email is awaken@maryomalley.com without an apostrophe in the O'Malley. And they can go to the website to see. I mean, I do retreats. My next retreat is in Costa Rica in February. I'm always ready to get out of the winter here. And then also they can go into the What's in the Way is the Way website. This book is getting wonderful endorsements.
That's
and
wonderful.
So they can read all the different endorsements.
So Mary O'Malley, it's so great to talk with you. Thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Oh, it's been my joy, Peter.
Thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.